I'm going to talk to you about child abuse. Now I'm going to ask you, are you a child abuser? You might be surprised to find out you are a child abuser sometimes. But before I do that, I want to share something else. That was just right up front so you knew the title. But before we get to that, we've been in a lot of prayer about moving the church. We have just, Harvey and I have just about lived in that question. What are we doing? Where are we going? How are we going to do this? God, what are you up to? And I asked him one day, why don't you just tell us? Why don't you just make it perfectly clear? You know, we'll do whatever you say. So why don't you just say what you want? And he said, I like the struggle. I want you to struggle. I want you to have to come together and talk and listen and relate to one another. I'm more interested in building your relationships than I am in just telling you where to go. He could tell a robot where to go, but he wants human beings who relate to one another. So yes, we're struggling through this, and it's good for us. It's very good for us. We need to do some things that are good for us because there's hard times ahead. We had a leadership meeting a couple weeks back for the sole purpose of praying about where do we go, what do we do, what are we supposed to do now that we've lost the building. It was the weirdest leadership meeting that we've ever had. Tana led the weird, as usual. Yeah. You know, sometimes when Tana gets weird, you know, she gets those weird visions and things, and the rest of us sometimes sit back and go, well, take into consideration it is Tana, you know, and or Harvey, and, you know, they can get weird. But the funny thing is, the weirder she got, the more the rest of us said, that bears witness. I really believe that's God. And what she was weird about was that things are going to get very tough in our country, in the world. But in America, where religion has been a freedom and a privilege, it's not always going to be that way. How many of you believe that someday the church will be persecuted again? Who believes that? Someday we're going to face great persecution. Has anybody read the book of Revelation? If you don't believe that and you think that's just thinking, try the book of Revelation. But most of us think someday means like after I'm dead and gone, not in my lifetime, not in my America. Look at the signs of the times. Things are changing. Certain things we preach are now called hate crime. They're not hate crime. They're love. To tell somebody, to rescue somebody from sin is love. To just say do whatever you want is to leave them to go to their own destruction. That is not love. That's not love. But in America, in the face of this earth, Satan is the prince of the power of the air. There are two lives going on. There are two realms going on. The realm we live in, the logic, the emotions, the desires, the greed, the fear, the hate, the violence. This is Satan's realm. That's how people think. That's how people feel and function. But there's a heavenly realm where everything is different. Everything is different. It's all based on love and mercy and holiness. God is love, but that does not mean that you can just sin and live in God's realm. Because then it wouldn't be God's realm anymore. It would be Satan's. God wants holiness. And Satan does not want holiness. There's a vision that I go in. I wasn't going to tell you this part because, you know, I'd just rather say Tana's weird, but I'll share my weird too. God and I have a meeting place. It's behind this waterfall, and we sit on rocks and we talk. But behind that waterfall is God's holy mountain. It's all white and shining and glowing and full of angels and full of things and revelations of God. And sometimes it takes me right inside those rocks and shows me things. Other times we go up to the top of the mountain. First time I went there, we went to the top of God's holy mountain. I saw across the way a big black mountain, which was Satan's mountain. And it was like these two kingdoms, evil and good. And God said, the day is coming when the two are going to be fully released. Both are contained. Both are restrained right now. But someday, you know the saying, all hell broke loose? One day all hell is going to break loose. And all heaven's going to break loose at the same time. And there's going to be a great war. This past week, I went up that mountain again. God sent me a text message. He's modern, you know. He's not behind the times. In my dream, God sent me a text message, and it said, meet me. I texted back, where? He said, waterfall. Well, it was around 4 a.m., and I'm like, now? 4 a.m.? He said, I'm waiting there. Oh, man, he's waiting there. I got to get up. So we went up our mountain again that day. And when I got to the top and I looked at that black mountain, it was pulsating, just pulsating, wanting to just break loose. And God said, it's still restrained, but not for long. The time is short. The time is short. And you need to be ready. After that mountain experience, God brought the word search to me. He brought me the word search. I kept thinking of searching, and it made me think of Psalm 139:23. I'm going to go through the search kind of quick, so I'm not going to wait for you. If you're really quick, follow along. If not, write them down and check me out later. Psalm 139:23, most of you know it, says, search me, O God, and know my heart, know my thoughts. I kind of rewrote this in my own way because I expounded on it. Search me, examine me intimately, God. Discover everything about me. Understand and reveal everything about me that I don't know about myself. Prove me. Know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me. And lead me. Guide me. Transport me into the way everlasting. Do you want to live forever? You're going to. One place or the other. Because we are eternal beings. I want to live forever in heaven, not the other place. And there's a way. There's a way. But the word says, narrow is the way, and few there be that find it. It's not a hard way. It's just opposite of the flesh way. You know what the devil offers? This is how he got the angels to follow him. God's always wanted to put rules on you. Can't do this. Can't do that. Devil said, I won't give you any of those kind of rules. I'll let you do whatever you want. You want to drink? You want to party? You want to do some drugs? Want to sleep around? Want to have a lot of fun? You want to just play video games, go to amusement parks, watch TV, veg out all day long? You can have it. Anything you want. That's what I'll give you. What he didn't tell you is the cost. He didn't tell you that the wages of that sin is eternal death. Separation from God. None of that can get into heaven. God is holy. And holiness, his goodness. Someone came and told me that their neighbors were harassing them, just treating them awful, swearing at them, sicking their dog on them, yelling at them. They went in the basement and turned their power off. And what do I do? What do I do? And I stood there and thought, wow, that would be really hard to live in, God. What should I tell her? And he said, tell her to go and win them with some love. Tell her to go and love them. Because love is stronger. Love is stronger than hate. A soft answer turns away wrath. You know, it's true. It's powerful. God can just walk in a room and overpower evil with his mercy. He's so awesome. He's so wonderful. But some of us are going to get overpowered with evil. We already do. Some of you are already in the trap of sin. You're already desperately, hopelessly failing all the time and giving up all the time and doing the same sin over and over and hating yourself and never getting any victory. And there's only one reason. You believe the enemy. You listen to him. Whatever he tells you about you, you believe him. So God says, if you're going to be my end time army, if you're going to survive this war, you have to get ready. And the first thing to getting ready is getting you ready. You have to be ready for this. That means you need to move out of the deception camp and start living in truth. That's where you need to live. So you need to ask God to search you. Do you know your weakness? Because the enemy does. He knows your weakness. Do you? He knows how to take you down every day, doesn't he? But do you even recognize that it's him? Or do you just let him beat you every day? You need to know your weakness so you can become strong. So I took the word search, and first of all, search me. Search me, God. Second of all, we need to search out a land. We need to search out where God is taking us as a church. Where are we going? Do you know the real name of this church started out as Mount Horeb? Officially, Mount Horeb. And the reason is that's the mountain where Moses first came into the powerful presence of God, to the burning bush, and received this encounter with God that changed him forever. He received his call. Then later, he got all the people and led them there, and he took them back up, and the same mountain had become Mount Sinai. Again, where the burning bush was, a place of preparation and training to give your life to God and follow him. So we started out as Mount Horeb. We had a training center called Mount Sinai. Somehow the whole thing just turned into burning bush. Either way you look at it, when you go up that mountain, you get to the burning bush. So we just called it burning bush. But in Deuteronomy 1:18, it says, when we departed from Horeb, when we departed from Horeb, first encounter, burning bush, was Mount Horeb. In this building, 5.5 years, we have come to the burning bush of God and to his presence, and we've received instructions. Some people have taken those instructions. Some people have not. Some people have taken this all for granted and done nothing with it. But it's time to leave Mount Horeb, and it's time to go and seek out the next promised land that he has for us. So when they left Mount Horeb, in verse 21, Deuteronomy 1:21, so the Lord has set a land before you. Go up and possess it. He says, don't be discouraged. Do not be discouraged. I have prepared a land before you. Go possess it. Don't be discouraged. You know what? We need to lose this building. We really need to lose it. Because God is not a building.
Right.
He's not a building. He's a people.
Right.
This building is not your church.
Right.
These people are your church.
Right.
It doesn't matter where we meet. What if persecution starts and we have to go into hiding? Because it's going to someday. What if we have to go underground like they did in the back when Jesus was, you know, first crucified in the catacombs and all these underground places the Christians hid because they were being killed? I asked one day, in this congregation, how many of you know you're going to get your head cut off one day for Jesus? I think we had 3 people raise their hand that day. Six? We had 6 people raise their hand. God had told them one day they will die for their faith. You know what? And they're not 10 years old people. He's one of them. He's already up in the 50s. He's going to get his head cut off one day for Jesus. How far ahead can it be? Most people don't live to 100. There is the youth renewal coming, though. So we don't know how far ahead it is, but there are people that have been prepared to die for their faith. There are mothers that have been told there's going to be torture of your children for their faith. You know, Janiyah didn't just wake up one day and say, I think it'd be awesome to have, you know, 12 or 13 kids. It sounds like a fun party. God called her and said, you're going to mother 12 end time prophets. Those children have a call to the end days. We're getting really close to those days, people. And we need to be ready. We need to be ready. We're not going to get ready by ignoring it, playing ostrich and putting our head in the sand and saying, I don't want to know this. I know somebody that says, don't talk about Jesus coming back. It scares me. Scare you more if he comes back and you didn't talk about it.
There you go.
It's going to happen whether you talk about it or not. You better talk about it and get ready. So we need to search out a land. And then they sent some people to check out the promised land. Here they are. They came out of Egypt. They had to leave Egypt where they were slaves. They get out in the desert and they whine and complain because they have to eat quail every day. We want to go back to Egypt where we could eat what we like. Really? You'd rather be in slavery and eat the food you like than be free? And then they get all the way to the promised land that God himself going before them in this pillar of fire every night and this cloud. I mean, he was so obviously present. And he says, I'm taking you to a promised land. Now, go check it out and then go possess it. And they go in and they look at it and they go, oh, giants, they're too big. This is too hard. We're scared. We're not going to go do this. We can't do this. Except for two men. Joshua and Caleb said, we can take them. God said so. But the people said no. So God sent them back out in the wilderness until they died, and he gave the land to another people, to their children. Do you want to possess what's of God before us? Or do you just want to go wander around the same old desert over and over and over till you die? I don't think so. I think you're an end time people. I think you're an end time people. I think you're called here for a purpose. And I don't think everybody is. Some people are just going to go on and move on up to heaven because they can't endure what's coming on this earth. But I think most of you are called for this. The people would not. But then when they got rebuked, they said, okay, we'll go. And God said, you better not, because I'm not going to go with you now. It's too late. See, he's looking for a people of faith that says, God says, go, we're going. I don't care where it is. We can do this. We can do it. Because if you don't have that kind of faith, you can't do it because you won't trust him and obey. You'll never trust and obey. All the wonderful worship going on this morning, I'm still sitting over there singing two old songs. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus. To trust and obey. And the other one was when he reached down his hand for me. He had to reach way down for me. I was lost and undone. I didn't know God or his son, but he reached way down for me. I love those songs. So the Lord will go before you. In verse 30, he said, this is why he's trying to encourage me. He said, the Lord goes before you and he will fight for you. This is an adventure. Harvey said we're getting ready for a new adventure. Adventures are sometimes dangerous. There's parts that are exciting and thrilling, and there's parts that are just scary. There's parts that are just boring, plain old boring. There's all kinds of parts to an adventure. But if it's where God's going, we need to be going that direction. Okay, so we need to ask God to search us and get us ready. We need to search out the land and know that we're going where he's leading us to go. Because we're going real soon. We're going to a new church meeting style real soon. Next Sunday is our last meeting in this building. We're already stripping the place. When you come next Sunday, I don't even know if there'll be worship equipment. We might come in and just sit on the chairs without tables or sound, or I don't know how much we're going to get done this week. But next Sunday is our last Sunday in this building. And there's a couple of things going on with that. Let's get back to Weird Tana. There's a little school building out on 84th Street that looks like a little old nothing. And it is a little old nothing. It's full of mold, maybe black mold, asbestos. The roof is bad. It's been neglected. Sits on 10 acres. The building is literally unusable. But that was Tana's vision, is that that's where we should go. Any volunteers? So at first, we went out there and looked at it and said, this is impossible. We can't even breathe. Everybody's holding their face and we can't even breathe. We can't do this. But you know, I got thinking about it. Everybody, before they went and looked at it, said, yeah, this is God. This is God. Yeah, we confirm it. This is God. And then they went to the land and looked at it and said, we can't do this. But there's nothing impossible for God. There's nothing impossible for God. Look at Jeremiah 32:27. He says, behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? We're going to make an offer while we're checking the land out. And we're going to make an offer that's ridiculous. And then we're going to ask them to sell it to us on a land contract, which is not what they said, for about half of what they said. And then we don't want to make a payment for 2 or 3 years. Because we're going to need that much time to either build something, tear that down, or clean the thing up. So if they accept our offer, that's the place. If they don't, then we keep searching out the land and find another place. In the meantime, we can't meet there. So we're going to be doing house churches. We're going to, in the beginning, do two. We're just going to do two because it takes a lot to get going. We may do more as time goes on. One of them we know is going to be at Janine Dudley's house. And they just moved into a house with like 6 bedrooms, 2 playrooms, 3 playrooms actually. It's just like massive space. So we're just going to cram all the kids on them. No, we're going to handle a whole lot of the adults. And so we're going to split up into two groups. Does that mean we're not one body? No. We're going to have worship services at our house. We have a reasonable amount of room and some overflow spaces. So we're going to have corporate worship where you all come together at our house. So we'll still be corporate. So we're still burning bush. But we're going to kind of do what you have to do when you go in hiding. Get into littler groups and meet wherever we can and learn how to do that. We're going to learn how to start little home churches so that we can start planting them all over the place for other people in different areas. It's a good experience for us to learn how to do that. It's going to be hard, and it's going to be awesome. We're going to grow and stretch in all kinds of ways. So next week we'll let you know where you go the next week. And today I would really like you to pick up one of our cards with a phone number. So if you're not here, yeah, one of the business cards with a phone number. That phone will still be the same. Glenn carries it around on him, except in the shower. That's when I always call him and he doesn't answer. He claims he takes a lot of showers. Right? He's just never answers that phone. He's the cleanest guy I ever met. So anyway, I want you to take a card so you're sure you have that number with you to make sure you can locate us if we don't locate you. But next Sunday, we will be giving you directions of where you get to meet on the 30th. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to probably have a worship at our house real soon so you all feel the togetherness again. So we're going to basically be dividing things up into three places. Janiyah and Dudley. And Glenn and Roxanne with other, and Harvey and I for worship will be at our house. So there'll be three locations. Corporate worship will probably be once a month, but we may need to do it twice in the first month just so that we're keeping that unity tighter. We'll see. We have two storage places. Brother Ed has offered to take some of our storage, and Brother Eric, who left, manages a storage company. He's going to take some of the storage, and some of it will be going to our house, her house, whatever they need. We're dividing everything up. This week, starting on Wednesday, Tuesday's inner healing, and I'm not going to be here Monday or Tuesday because I have to get my, Janiyah and I are getting a sitter and getting my house ready. But Wednesday through Friday, from 11 to 4, if you come here, you will not be waited on with a cup of cocoa. You can get your own cocoa and then put on your work boots because we're going to put you to work. So the next 2 weeks, everything, every day, normally Tuesday through Friday, 11 to 4, will be work. And we would love for anybody who will help come over and help us. And the next two Saturdays will be major moving. So anybody can carry something. I mean, I carried toys all morning and loaded my van with her kids' toys. They're lightweight and I could lift them. There's something you can carry or drive a truck.
Very important.
Or something.
Next two Saturdays, 10 in the morning until whenever, my dad had a saying, many hands make small and much work. Have you ever had to rake a yard by yourself? No fun.
If you think that's bad, try to stomp the fire out on a whole yard by yourself.
Okay. We can talk about that later. Anyway, I didn't know the neighbor had his grass on fire to make it grow. I didn't.
So he stomped it out. Why would rubber tennis shoes?
Why would your grass be on fire? That doesn't make sense to me. Still, you know. And I came home. But anyway, whatever she said that for, I don't know. But this week, I remember we used to have to rake the yard. And I hated raking the yard. But if my brother and I did it, it was like it was only half the yard. And then when we had Tim, it was only a third of the yard. So I liked it. Many hands make small and much work.
So the next
if only five of us show up, there's a whole lot of work for us. But if every... Is this your church? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is this your church?
Yep.
I'm sorry. I can't hear your head rattle.
Yeah.
Is this?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Then Saturday, 10 a.m. Okay, now maybe you can't come on Saturday, but you can come during the week. The point is to be here to help, okay? But on Saturday, if everybody was here, we'd be done pretty quick moving whatever we're going to do. Brother Ed's got a big old truck. We're going to load all that. We'll all jump in cars. We'll go somewhere. Okay, but everybody show up, okay?
Okay. There will not be a women's meeting tonight, nor next Sunday night. We are working on changing that. Men need to get together Wednesday night, and you need to talk about one of your houses you can meet in from then on. So those things need to be reset. We'll let you know when they are. There will be inner healing Tuesday, but there will not be inner healing the next Tuesday, just tomorrow, and then we'll figure that out later. So just this one Tuesday, and then we'll figure it out from there. Okay? She's the teacher, so she needed to know. All right. I want to give you this quick, why do I want to talk about child abusers in the midst of this move? Because this is something you need to hear. It's part of you getting ready. It's part of you getting ready. I'm not talking about molesting a child. I'm not even talking about beating a child. I'm talking about verbal abuse. Verbal abuse. Have you ever been degraded when you were a child? Did you ever have anyone say things like, "What is wrong with you?" My mom used to say, "What is wrong with you?" And I used to think, "I don't know. But there must be something really terribly wrong with me because she keeps asking me." I spent half of my life trying to figure out what was wrong with me because I believed her. That was my mother. Have you ever had anyone say to you, "You are lazy. You're just a lazy bum. You didn't do that job right. You only did it half right. You are lazy." You know, we've all had some child-rearing classes, and we've learned that if you speak down to somebody, they will live down to what you think of them, especially parents speaking to children, especially sisters and brothers. It destroys people. If you speak down to your husband or wife, they will eventually start living down to what you say about them, but especially children. When you speak down to a child, you're forming in their mind who they think they are. It's abusive to verbally say degrading things to a child. It's abusive. I bet they were said to you. I bet there were verbal abuses said to you, if not from your parents, maybe teachers, grandparents, sisters, brothers, mean kids at school. School is the cruelest place in the world. That's why I used to go in the front door and out the back door and skip every day, because I couldn't take the verbal abuse. Just call my mom at work like 4 days out of five and say, "She's gone again." Then my mom had to try to find me. I didn't care what she did to me. I wasn't going to go to school. I went on Friday and took the test so I wouldn't fail. I wouldn't go Monday through Thursday almost every day of my school life when I was old enough to get out, because kids are cruel. And I happen to have been pigeon-toed, knock-kneed, and cross-eyed, so I got made fun of a lot for that. I wasn't fat. I got fat later. I told the ladies in the coffee bar, "I'm just staying really old and really fat so the rest of you feel better about yourself. You know, so I'll keep that up for you." I like to make you feel good. Have you ever looked at somebody and thought, "You disgusting. You are disgusting"? Have you had anyone ever tell you you're disgusting? Would you even imagine saying that to your child? You just disgust me. You're repulsive. You disgust me. Would you think about saying that to your child? How would they grow up with any kind of self-confidence and good character if you convince them that they're totally a failure and disgusting, ugly, stupid? What is wrong with you? That is no way to raise a child, is it? Into becoming all that they can potentially. We as parents see their potential. We know who they can be. We know what they can do. We don't talk to them that way, do we? Well, we shouldn't. Once in a while we might, but we shouldn't. You don't want anyone to talk to you like that. You're a quitter, jerk, dope. We wouldn't want to talk to children like that. What if someone came into your house and talked to your child that way? You're trying to raise them in a godly way, convince them that they can live for God, that they are worth something, that they're lovable and they're capable and they're created with a purpose. What if you had a grandpa or a grandma that came over every day and undermined all of that love and just kept looking at that child and saying, "Useless, worthless, failure, you're never going to make it. Your dad had a bad temper and you're just like your dad. You can't overcome a temper. Those things are powerful. They're going to get the best of you. You drink? Oh, man. That's a bad habit. No, you can't break it. Once you're an alcoholic, drugs, that's even worse. You'll never be free. You've ruined your life. Would you let that person keep coming in your home to talk to your child like that? Absolutely not. So who is the child abuser? Well, first of all, who's the child? You. You are a child of God. And you are a child abuser of God's child when you talk to yourself that way. When you keep cutting yourself down, you're abusing God's child. And he doesn't like it. He does not want you to think about or talk to yourself that way. You're not good enough. You're not strong enough. You don't sound good and you can't do it. He does not like you abusing his child, which is you. So we're going to stop it. We're not going to allow that anymore. We need to repent of that. And actually, you're just the co-partner in it. Because it's really an evil spirit that comes and lies to you. But the minute you agree with that spirit, it gets to live in you. And you know, once the spirit lives in you, it kind of rules your thoughts and your emotions. So let's just take, for instance, that you look in the mirror and you go, disgusting. I am disgusting. You've just agreed with the spirit that told you that. And now it moves in you. Whatever it is that disgusts you about yourself now, that spirit lives in you and it sees everybody that way with that similar fault. And you'll go around telling, ooh, that person's disgusting. Ooh, that person is lazy. Ooh, that person is stupid. Because you've allowed that spirit to live in you. Now you not only abuse this child of God, you abuse all the other children of God too that you meet. So we become the child abusers. God does not like child abuse, verbal child abuse. You have to break agreement with it.
Yes.
So when a spirit comes to you, your own thought comes to you, because that's how spirits talk to you. When they come to you and they say, you can't do this, it's too hard. And you go, yeah, I can't do this. This is way too hard. When I want you to write this down, there's a few verses you need to live by. Number one is Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. And you're going, I already know that verse. I've heard it a million times. Good. Then you don't have to spend time learning it. You already know it. Now it's in your arsenal. Start using it. Whenever your thought comes, this is too hard, I can't do it, pull that verse out and shoot that thought down. It's an enemy spirit. I can do this if God wants me to. I can do anything God wants. Is anything too hard for God? I'm glad you know that verse. Start living by it. Start using it to defend yourself. Thinking, I'm not smart enough. I don't know what to do. I'm confused. I'm not sure. Then pull out this one, James 1:5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally, freely, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Upbraideth means he doesn't mock you. You ever been around somebody who mocks your intelligence? That used to really get me. That used to get to me because I was afraid. I'm a B student. I went through college with B's. I mean, I skipped school every day and went in on Friday and took the test and got an A so that I could pass with a D and not have to go to school. But when I graduated and went to college, I worked as hard as I possibly could because my husband has a genius IQ, and so does my daughter. So they were upset if there was not a plus on their A. And if there's a way to get a plus plus with bonus, they were going to get two pluses on their A. So I was intimidated. I went to college, and I said, I got to get an A to be as good as my husband. And I pulled a B plus. I went, darn, I'm not as smart as him. I just can't compete. I don't need to compete with him. I was not created to do the fulfillment of my life by being a genius. I don't need to be a genius. I taught school in a Christian school, and I taught school by a genius. He was a genius, but he had no people skills. He didn't know how to teach because he couldn't reach the students. He degraded them. He was a child abuser verbally. My students did well because I believed in them and encouraged them. I didn't need to be a genius.
Right.
I just needed to love them and tell them they could do it, and then they tried. He told them they were dumb and they couldn't do it, so they didn't try. See, what you speak into people, what you let come into you, Once you've had enough healing and you know who you are in God, you know how much He loves you, you know who you are and what you're here for, and you're okay with it. You're okay with being you. Then you don't let people abuse you anymore. It doesn't matter what they say. We were talking about that yesterday, that I went to Thanksgiving over to my family's house. I wore a really pretty top and a really pretty skirt and leg warmers. And my kids over there were like, "Mom, what are you wearing? Those leg warmers are ugly. You can't wear those with a dress." And I said, "They keep my legs warm. I think they look okay. I like them." And they were all laughing at me and saying, "Hey, did you see Mom's leg warmers? And Mom, that is so gaudy. That is so ugly." Leggings, whatever they were. And I don't even know what they are. They just feel good. So anyway, at the end of the day, one of my daughters says to me, not that one, she's nicer. She says, "Mom, please do not wear those when you come back for Christmas. They are really ugly." It never even offended me. I don't even care if she liked them or not. I will wear them anytime I want to. I'll wear them to church. I have. And if you laughed at them, that's your problem. I don't care, because I'm comfortable with who I am in God, and I'm comfortable. So I'm not insecure anymore. So I don't live by your judgment of me. I live by God's acceptance of me.
Right.
Okay? So we need to know who we are in God if we're going to be able to stand in these last days. We need to know who we are. Who you are is not defined by what others think of you. It's not defined by what you see in the mirror.
Right.
Let's move on to that one. Well, let me finish this one. When you feel stupid, when you don't know what to do, when you have no idea, you're confused, you don't have the answer, simply ask God, who freely gives you wisdom. Now, you can't be double-minded, then you're unstable. When you ask God, you have to believe the thought that He brings you.
Right.
You have to believe. And it may be shocking, and you go, "That can't be God." Well, then get some confirmation, but don't throw it away. God promised anyone. He didn't even say, "If you're a Christian who walks with me." Anyone who asks God for wisdom, He'll give you the wisdom. So just ask Him. You don't have to be smart. You get to go to the teacher and ask Him the answers. He'll freely show you the answer key.
There you go.
So let's go with the beauty. Let's go with our physical appearance. Do you look in the mirror and go, "I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm too ugly, I'm too whatever"? Do you look in the mirror and be disgusted with your physical appearance? Then you need Psalm 139:14. "I will praise Thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are Your works, and that my soul knows right well." We were created in the image of God. Psalm 139:14. We were created in the image of God. And God's image is not about physical beauty.
Right.
It's not. Are you afraid that if you're not physically beautiful, skinny, Barbie and Ken look, that people don't like you? You're wrong. If you look like Barbie and Ken, people hate you. They're jealous. Who likes Barbie and Ken? Nobody. As soon as you're Barbie, I don't want to stand by Barbie. I mean, why would I want to hang out with Barbie and make me look worse, you know? Nobody is drawn to you because you're physically beautiful unless they are carnal, fleshly, worldly, full of lust, and they don't know anything about real relationship. Scott's sister, Paula, is beautiful. She's always been beautiful. I mean, she is just really, and back when she was 19, when I first saw her, I mean, she had an amazing beauty, and her eyes were drop-dead gorgeous and skinny, and she had half of the misery of her life was because she was so pretty. Girls didn't like her in school. Women didn't want to be her friend because they were afraid their husband would look at her. And every man that met her wanted to marry her tomorrow. But they didn't even know her. They wanted to marry her because she's pretty, and he had no idea who she was. That was actually an insult to her. That was an insult. She had a hard time having deep relationships because of her beauty, because only the lustful, carnal takers and users were attracted to beauty. She wanted something better than that. Psalm 96:6, "Honor and majesty are before Him. Strength and beauty are in His sanctuary." Psalm 96:9, "O worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Fear before Him all the earth." God's presence is beautiful. Holiness is beautiful. When you carry the presence of God, it's love, it's peace, it's wisdom, and people will be drawn to you like a magnet because that's what they want. They want to be loved. They want to be accepted. They want someone who cares about them and can help them. That's beautiful. That will draw people to you no matter what you look like. I know somebody who's very, very homely, and the first time I saw this person, I can't help it. My first thought was, she is really homely. I wasn't with her 5 minutes till she was beautiful. Within 5 minutes of sensing the presence of God on her, she was beautiful. The beauty of God is the beauty we want to carry. It was an old black woman down in Detroit that said, girls, if you want a good husband, just get filled up with the Holy Ghost. And he will attract a godly man, because there's nothing more beautiful to the right man than a godly woman. But if you go for the other kind of beauty, you will attract the wrong man and you will be miserable.
That's exactly right.
Now, what's that song? Never make a pretty woman your wife.
You want to be happy for the rest of your life. Make an ugly woman your wife. My personal point of view.
Get an ugly girl to marry you. Look at those legs. Anybody remember that song? Chicken legs. Proverbs 31:30. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Paul talked about a thorn in his flesh, and this is the one we're going to end on. 2 Corinthians, if you want to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, starting in verse 7. Oops, there's money in my Bible. Rick, would you put that in that plate before I forget it? Thank you. I had Googled something in here. It just made me think, when you need wisdom, go to God and ask. Don't go to Google, unless God sends you to Google. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. Paul, the Apostle Paul, mighty man of God, said, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought, I begged the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And then Paul says, most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. All we have to supply is our part. I'll bring the weakness. God brings the strength. But you know what? Some people think Paul was talking about bad eyesight. You know, that maybe, I don't know where they got this, but they thought, oh, see how large a letter I write. Some people say that means Paul had bad eyes. And he was asking God, I got bad eyesight. Fix my eyes. And God said, no, you know, you need a little bit wrong with you. But if that's all it was, Paul wouldn't have gone on and listed all these things he was weak in. Paul knew his weakness, but he had a revelation. When you know you're weak, you can receive the strength of Christ.
Right.
When you think you're strong, you keep doing it in the flesh.
Yep.
But when you know you're weak, then you depend on him and he does it and it's powerful. So he knew. Jesus said, my grace is sufficient for you. He basically said, I'm enough. I am enough. But I am is enough. I am
right.
Is everything. I am is everything. He said, my divine influence, that's grace. My divine influence on you is enough. My reflection in you, my presence in your life is enough. If you don't have that, you don't have enough. If you don't walk in his presence, if you don't live in that divine influence, then you are not sufficient. You will not make it in these last days. But if you have him, you can be weak because he's enough. Even in your sickness, even though you're in pain, even in infirmities, infirmities is pain. Paul said, wow, I got it, God. I am so excited. I'm not just saying I accept it. I'm saying I rejoice in it. I pleasure in it. I'm excited when everything is horrible because then Jesus is going to come up in me and be seen. You don't get a miracle if you don't need one. And as long as you keep running in your own strength, you're going to just keep having the same problems. So he went on and said, I'm going to get excited because I know I can't do anything. I'm going to get excited and take pleasure when I'm sick. I'm going to take pleasure when I'm reproached. That means when somebody insults me, injures me, wounds me, I'm going to take pleasure in that. Why? So that the reality of Christ can be seen in me. When you persecute me and I go through hardships and trials and tests, I'm going to be happy about that because Christ can be seen in that situation. For Christ's sake, for the sake of letting Jesus be enough and be seen. So now, in this situation, in this condition, I know the anointing is going to come on me when I depend on Him. Because I am weak, He's going to be strong. So we need to admit our weakness. We need to admit our frailty. We need to go to Him with our hurt and our persecutions and needs and say, God, there's nothing I can do about this. I cannot do it. We cannot do this move. We cannot do this transition. We cannot be ready for the end times that are coming. We cannot overcome our sin and our problems. We can't. But He's enough.
Amen.
He's enough when we turn to Him and depend on Him. He can and He will. He can and He will, because I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me.
Right.
Sometimes we get tested in the silliest things. There was only 2 polka-dotted bowls in my cupboard. I like polka-dotted bowls. So I was going to keep it for me, because I needed 3 bowls. Only 2 were going to get polka-dots. So I thought, I'm going to get a polka-dot. And God said, give it to the men. I went, men don't like polka dots. I said, give it to the men. So I put the bowls on the counter, and I'm fully ready to put the soup in the polka dots. The guy said, I was just testing you. Men don't like polka dots. Give them the white bowls. He tests us in the silly little things because He wants us to be instantly obedient in everything.
Right.
In everything. If you won't give the man the polka dotted bowl, you probably won't do what God asks you to do in a bigger way either.
Right.
He that's faithful in the little will be faithful in the big thing.
Right.
So do what He wants in everything. In every way, all your ways acknowledge Him and He will direct your paths. And you will be ready to obey when it really counts. If your child is not taught to obey you and you say, go to your room. I don't want to go to my room. Go to your room right now. Why? Because I said so. But why? Well, because this is the reason I want you to go. And you explain everything and you let them argue. When they're running out in the road and a car is coming and you're saying, stop! Why? They're going to run in the road and they're going to be killed. If you do not teach them instant obedience, someday it could cost them their life.
Right.
Love is discipline for your good. God is a good daddy and He's preparing us. Again, your enemy knows your weakness. Do you? Let God be your strength, but you need to know where you're weak in order for that to work.